Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from offered by Living Compassion. My name is Justin and I'm pleased to be joined today by Penny. Penny, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Penny. Thanks for being on the show with us today.
Sure.
So, Penny, as you're aware, one of the things we've been exploring in practice recently as a result of a retreat that we did and just some other things that have been going on is a focus of not feeling bad. And so I wonder if you would be willing to kind of say a little bit about what you've been seeing as you've been working with that.
Well, one of the things that's interesting to me is that since that focus was brought up recently in a retreat, I actually have had the experience of not feeling bad. And just for starters, it's a lot more pleasant life.
Yeah, boy, that's the truth, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I mean, it's not in a way, again, anything new that Sherry for years has been talking about, you know, turning your attention to what is positive and uplifting and supports you. And it's, but I think part of what the focus has done for me is really bring home that the only thing feeling bad serves is egocentric karma conditioning.
Yeah, the only thing it serves is egocentric karma conditioning.
Yeah, and that, you know, the point that was made recently is that that is, in fact, the mechanism by which egocentric karma conditioning maintains itself. If we don't give egocentric karma conditioning that ammunition, that neural pathway, you know, of now I feel bad, it doesn't have anything, it doesn't have anything. We have robbed it of its energy.
Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah, because that's really true, isn't it? You know, because at the end of any conditioned process is feeling bad. It's almost like that's what they all sort of end in.
Yeah.
And if we don't go there, if we're not willing to feel bad, then it loses its power over us, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. You know, we talk a lot in the practice about the grooves, you know, and it's such a deep groove to feel bad. In fact, I remember growing up, there was a feeling that feeling bad was part of how you demonstrated that you were a good person. It was a good person thing to do, to feel bad, if you did something hurtful or unskillful. And it's not that we don't care about doing things unskillful or hurtful, but what I'm finally beginning to see is that the result of feeling bad does not serve me in changing my behavior, in seeing anything new, because then if I feel bad, what I get focused on is feeling bad, not how I might have gotten into that situation.
Oh, okay. So if you're focused on feeling bad, what you get is feeling bad. And so you don't get to see like the process that happened to get you to the place you're in, or you don't get any of the information that comes out of the event that could be helpful to you and might help you to change your behaviors in a way that would be more, like, let's say, more skillful. The focus all goes to feeling bad, and so that's all you get. And because that's all you get, then you're just set up for the next go round of something happens and that you weren't aware of, and then you end up feeling bad.
Right, right. It's one of those, you know, one process does not lead to another situations.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we believe that if we feel bad, that will correct our behavior, and then we won't do those awful things anymore. But since the focus of attention is on feeling bad, that's the groove that gets deepened, and that process does not lead to the process of seeing how that happens, you know, not choosing to do that again, anything like that. It just leads to the process of reinforcing itself.
Yeah, it's so true. It just leads to the same process. So all we get is feeling bad. It definitely doesn't make us a good person. I mean, there's really no such thing as a good person. It doesn't even get us it doesn't give us any sort of happy place to be in relationship to anything that's happened. It just gives us feeling bad and gives us no way to have a different result in the future.
Yeah, it does. And I really get how, what ego would want me to do is say, okay, now you know that that feeling bad is egocentric, so you shouldn't do it because that's egocentric.
You should feel bad if you feel bad.
it is. Yeah, so you should feel bad about the fact that you feel bad because
mm-hmm.
that's ego-centric.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, same old. And the point really is not to give my life over to egocentricity to interpret for me. And
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, when I feel bad, egocentricity is interpreting my experience for me.
Mm-hmm. And Penny, I wonder if you could describe, like, if you're not doing that, because that's what we're supposed to be doing from ego's point of view, is
yeah.
believing everything that it's saying and then end up feeling bad. If you're not doing that, you know, I wonder if you could speak to, you know, where do you end up or what's the kind of place you're coming from in relationship to life without that?
Well, you know, the word that comes up for me is uncluttered.
Uncluttered.
So I've done some, you know, I haven't stopped doing periodic unskillful things because I don't feel good. but what happens is that it's like a nasty channel doesn't get turned on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just free to say, oh, wow. Oh, wow. I mean, that's really sort of the experience, Justin, is oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
How did that happen? It'd be interesting to see just how that happened. And I, you know, would really like not to fall into that one again. But
mm-hmm.
there's a kind of clearness to it. There's a kind of lightness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not cluttered up with all the conversation about how I ought to feel and wasn't it awful. And I mean, it feels light and clear, and like all the energy is available to see how it happens. So that I can just become clearer about how those things happen or don't.
Yeah, that's, and I think what you're talking about being cluttered or not cluttered is your attention.
Yep.
Would you agree?
Yep.
So that your attention, what I'm hearing what you're saying, or part of what I'm hearing is, without the feeling bad, which is really, it's just an attention magnet is all it is.
Yep.
And without that, without your attention going to feeling bad, you're freed up for your attention to go to other places. And one of the places you can put your attention is sort of the how of all
mm-hmm.
of life as it's happening. So,
yep.
I mean, there could be, you know, in any situation like where there's some, quote, unskillful thing that happens, there's going to be tons of good information in there about how you're conditioned, about how life works and other possibilities. And because your attention is not being distracted by feeling bad, all that those kind of more fruitful, happy, expansive areas are available to you.
Yeah, and I'm available to them. You know, if I'm not caught up in feeling bad, then I am available for whatever I see. And you know, the other thing is there's no residue.
Mm-hmm.
So if something comes up and I, you know, muff something and I can just see that I've done it, that's the end of it. It's clear. There's no residue that then gets in the way of seeing the next thing that I'm doing. You know?
Yeah,
if I'm carrying around feeling bad, then that's what's going to be preoccupying me through the next however long.
Yeah, for sure, and just blinding the attention. You know, that
yeah.
kind of leads us to this other question I'm really curious about is, you know, obviously an overarching focus, practice focus for the year is, you know, being lit up together. How would you relate, you know, the practice of not feeling bad with the practice of being lit up?
Well, feeling bad is not a lit up place.
It isn't a lit up place.
No, it is a dreary and dark place. So I think all I was saying about feeling lighter and clearer,
uh-huh.
I mean, it's about being available to, you know, if I'm responding to something that happens with, oh my God, how could I have done that, blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
that is truly not a lit up place. But if I respond from, oh wow, gee, you know, there's something to see here. That in itself is a kind of light, and one could say lit up place to be coming from.
Yeah, I can really see that. That's interesting thinking about light. You know, light
yeah.
and lit up. It's light. It's not like this life and death sort of thing we're involved with all the time. Life is like from that place. Life is light, and because it doesn't mean something about me all the time. And that's
it's a free place. I guess that's the other thing.
A free place.
A free place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we're free of that weight, if we're free of that preoccupation with, oh, God, you know, how could I have done this, then we're free to just live. And so just living free is a pretty lit up place to live.
That's a lit up place. Yeah. Well, I can really hear it as you're talking about it, what a lit up place it is, because, you know, it's I'm projecting, you know, it's expansive, it's kind of exciting. You know, I like that oh wow, because I'm projecting exclamation points after that. Oh wow. It's not just oh wow, like oh, you know, like this unhappy thing. It's like, oh wow. Here's an opportunity to wake up and end suffering.
Yeah. Boy, you know, and as I hear you reflect that, what I'm seeing is insofar as, you know, there's any I at all, it's like I'm on my own side.
Mm.
You know, that oh wow is like, oh, let's look at this. There's nobody against me in that. It's just all the energy, everything that's present is here to be present to it, and nobody is expending any energy beating anybody up.
Mm-hmm. You're really, you know, kind of in the old-fashioned way of saying it, at one with life in that, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, which is part of the freedom. You know, it's part of the, I'm not being chained by anything. I'm available and free, and it actually can even be fun.
Uh-huh, yeah, and really lit up.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I mentioned in group on Sunday that I had an experience of, you know, getting some information, just spacing it, not getting it, you know, getting it repeated, not hearing it because I had my conditioned scrambler going, and then finally getting it and realizing, you know, this message had to be delivered 3 times before I got it. It was a very simple message. And all I could do was laugh. And
uh-huh.
I thought, boy, you know, that, and then it was over. That's the other thing. Then it was over.
Yeah,
because
no residue.
There wasn't any process going on about how I should feel about that.
Mm-hmm. You just saw what had happened, and
yep.
You saw that, and then it was
yep.
gone. It was done, and it was gone, and there's no suffering, no meaning, no feeling bad.
Yeah, yeah. It's a better place to live.
It sure is. It sure is. Well, thank you very much, Benny. That's our time, and really appreciate the input, and hopefully everyone who's listening can take it on as a practice of not feeling bad.
Thanks, Justin.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, Michael, passing over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Penny. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure and privilege to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
Good. How are you? Hot.
Great.
The answer.
Yes, yes. As you know, I was at the monastery last week as well, and it's definitely hot up there.
Yes, it's a good practice opportunity to be the Zen student that just sweats.
Yes, yes. When it's hot, we sweat, and when it's
yep.
cold, we shiver.
Yes.
It was great to be on retreat last week, and it's just such a privilege to be there, and I'm grateful for you and for the monks and the guide and, you know, all of the people and the universe lining up to make that support possible for me.
Yeah, we're really, really lucky, aren't we?
We are really lucky.
That's probably the only response to that.
Yes, it's true. It's great.
Yeah. We can all, you know, just do a deep gusho and know that that it expresses all of the gratitude for what we've been given and all of the gratitude for what we can give for that shared experience.
Yes, yes, yes. And what's coming up as you say that is, how to say it, wanting to continue to practice and to support practice, to make available for the people who will come after me the extraordinary gifts that I've received as well.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah. Yes, that the transformation that is possible is the coin that we repay with. That we've
yes.
been given so much that we can't but give back in the same way.
Yes.
And to do everything that we possibly can in order to do that, in whatever measure we're able to.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's, as you say, gratitude wants to give.
Gratitude wants to give.
And that's how it comes out.
Yeah. And really something I think we looked at too, right, Michael, is that gratitude wants to give but can only do so when we're completely open to receiving and enjoying what we've been given.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because those two are the same thing.
those two are the same thing, and if we can't receive what we are given, then we don't overflow from that place, which is the
yes.
only place in which you can give.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. If I'm not receiving, then I'm going to feel small and not enough, and from there, there's no place left to give.
That's right. Yep, absolutely. And you know, just to have fun and enjoy what you are given.
Yes. Yes.
We bypass that also, unfortunately.
Yes, yes. And to say thank you for this here now instead of, you know, focusing on what could be different or what something inside says it wants.
Yep.
Yep. Great. I have some announcements here.
Great. More great retreats, I bet.
More, yes. And I'm only going to mention a couple, but as you know, if folks can go online to schedule.livingcompassion.org to find out more about many more opportunities. The last, go ahead.
Oh, and I think you're going to say this, but it was the email class.
Yes. Yes, there's several. There's still time to sign up for the new email class, which is entitled Zen and the Enneagram. And we're going to look at how our Enneatypes embrace and resist practice. And they're a great way to stay connected to Sangha.
Yep.
Also, the last There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat of the season is September 11th through 18th. Registration is now open for this foundational retreat, and the spots are filling fast. So all this and more at schedule.livingcompassion.org. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Sandy from Florida.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Hi, how are you, Ashwini? Hi,
good,
Michael.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing a callback. I spoke with Sherry on the radio show almost 6 weeks ago now. I'm delighted to say that the lines have been all lit up, and I haven't been able to get through for almost 6 weeks. So,
wow.
I know.
I'm so glad that you managed to get through today.
And, well, I got on the phone sooner even. I was having a lot of, the voices were giving me a really hard time, and I felt like the practice that I wanted in my life, my meditation and the things that nurtured my soul that I've discovered through practice were turning into be like a to-do list for me. And I was feeling burdened by, I just have to cross meditation off my list. And I seem to have been losing the joy.
Uh-huh.
And
so quite amazing. Sorry, say that again.
I called in to talk to Sherry about it, and I was just feeling overwhelmed with all the things I enjoy doing and was just even helping other people and practicing and, you know, all the things that I really enjoy in life just felt like a burden. And
if I might reflect what you just said, I think what you're saying is that everything that was for your heart was taken by conditioning and converted into something that you should do as a consequence of which you felt burdened by it.
Oh, you said that so well. That's exactly right. You know, it was all the things I love doing, all the things that warm my heart, nurture my soul, had become through conditioning a to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
And so my challenge was to get that back. To take that back from conditioning. And first I had to recognize that it was conditioning that had done that. And then she suggested that perhaps what I do is take a look at my day and set up a skeleton kind of a template if you will, of what my day would look like if I were to choose to do things that would nurture me in the most compassionate, self-disciplined way.
And so get life to do the schedule instead of conditioning.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. Get life to do the schedule instead of conditioning. That's exactly right. And so life guided me to getting up in the morning and doing all the things that that I know make for a better day for me, like starting my day with meditation, like having a very healthy breakfast, like exercising in one form or another, and then, you know, being a homeowner and gardening, and then time for my neighbors and my family, and so I've been living that life schedule now for about a month, 6 weeks, and it has just been so much gentler, so much more joyful, and I am very, very grateful.
Oh, that sounds so wonderful. And I think, you know, what comes up for me while you're saying that, right, Sandy, is that conditioning would have us have us be on a schedule that doesn't include the being, that it's all for everyone else. And so but life never makes that distinction of separation, that we don't get to participate in our own lives.
Well, that's exactly what was happening. I called complaining that it would seem as though I actually had gone through a period right around the end of March, the beginning of April, that I was physically ill and was having some health problems because I had no time. My schedule was jam-packed, and there wasn't enough time to exercise. I was eating meals on the run. Meditation was if I could fit it in. And it was all wonderful things I was doing, but I wasn't doing anything for myself. And so the joy had gone right out of it.
Yeah, and I think what you're pointing out is that ego as a process just wants to take over life completely, and so the authenticity in life can't actually express itself. It's based on writing ourselves out of the schedule.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and so I knew on some level that unless I cared for myself, I wouldn't be able to care for other people or do things for other people that I enjoyed doing, but there were so many other things that I just didn't put myself first because it sounded selfish. You know, conditioning told me, who do you think you are to put yourself first? You know, you should be a selfless person. You need to give to everybody else, and then if there's time for you, then fine, but you give to other people first. And I was buying that, and it was leading me down a very, very dark path. I was starting to resent the people that I love and care for because I was so tired and cranky and ill. And so I am just so much happier now, and nothing really has changed except that, and I'll steal your phrase back, instead of letting conditioning set up my schedule, I'm living the schedule that life is letting me live.
Yeah, and from that we can really learn something important, right, Sandy, which is what conditioning would say as selfish really only propagates the self of the ego, and what life would say would be selfless is to include all aspects of life. And so if you come from that place that all sentient beings are one and there's a oneness for everything, then there is no ability to be selfish because everybody's included in that orientation, which is a life orientation. Only from the feeling of separation does the self stay selfish.
Wow. Excellent. Yes. Yes. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, I'm so grateful. I'm so happy that life has created such a wonderful schedule for you.
Yeah, I'm just really, you know, trying to be as diligent as I can to not let conditioning hijack it. Because I know when I let my guard down, conditioning would love to just run right in there and turn things around on me. So I'm practicing and practicing. And if I may, I would like to put in a plug for Zen coaching, because I have not availed myself of Zen coaching until most recently. And I'm in my first six-week session, and after just two sessions, I have had so many awakening moments that I am beyond delighted. And so if I can share that with Sangha out there, it is just amazing, the insights from Zen coaching that I'm getting, and I'm delighted, and I don't want conditioning to keep me from doing it again. Conditioning told me a million reasons why I shouldn't get involved in Zen coaching, and once I put them all aside and went ahead and did it, it is amazing, and I am filled with gratitude. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and it's always like that, right, Sandy, because conditioning always telling us what not to do, and then when we do it, we have the most amazing experience, and if we stick with practice, we end up choosing the experience over what it's telling us, and that itself is the practice that we're doing, training our attention to be on life and what life encouragement is instead of conditioning.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being there, Ashwini, and thank you too, Michael.
Dikasho. Take care.
Bye now.
Thanks for joining us, Sandy. You're listening to Open Air. Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jill in Brooklyn.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Ashwini. Michael.
How are you?
Hi.
I'm very good. I'm so excited I got on.
Still glowing from the last retreat, I hope.
Yes. Yes, and actually the reason why I'm calling is because there was a recording that I made from the last retreat that I've listened to many times. It was a talk that Sherry did, and there was a part of it that she said something, and so I'm just calling to ask a question about it, but I have a feeling that you'll be able to answer it.
Well, let's
or the question will be put out there anyway, and somehow I will get the answer will appear at some point.
Or perhaps you'll see it.
Or I will see it, exactly. Well, that's the thing, is I think I've seen it. I just want to get some perspective on it, because so Sherry has this book, That Which You Are Seeking Is Causing You to Seek, which I've had for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I always interpreted the title to mean that was a bad thing. That uh-huh. which you are seeking, it's a bad thing that it's causing you to seek.
Oh, my.
And so so when she said that in this, retreat, she was talking about the title and this very, she sort of passed it over, which is part of a larger point. And I heard it on the recording, and I was like, oh, I see. She's talking about it in a way where that's actually a good thing, where it's actually authenticity that is seeking authenticity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that the word causing, because I guess maybe I have something of, if something is causing something, oftentimes that's a bad, I don't know, that just seems to, cause, I don't know, I guess I have an association with causing, is oftentimes described in terms of like this thing is causing this bad thing to happen,
uh-huh.
So I guess
have you been
always
seeing anything around that process of good and bad and how that happened?
Well, what was so, considering that this title, that word might not be used in that way to mean bad, it sort of mm-hmm. opened up this whole, what oftentimes happens when, you're in a, you're making an assumption about something and all of a sudden it shifts dramatically.
Uh-huh.
Where, it just opens up this whole other, it's like that wonderful experience where it feels like, you know, this whole other room opens that you didn't know that you that was there.
The scrambler drops suddenly, and so now you're receiving it in a way that you were never able to receive it before because the conditioned scrambler was operating.
Yeah, it felt like when I heard it, when I heard her say it on the recorder, there was some, you know, way that I could hear it that I hadn't heard it before. And yeah, it sounds like that new way. I think there was a new way that she was talking about it. It allowed me to understand it in a different way.
That kind of understanding you feel like you can put words to, or would that just take away from that intuitive experience of how you now understand it?
Well, the way that I understood it when I heard it again, it sounded like what she was saying was that it's not that that the original way I understood it was that there was a seeker who was causing me to seek, and that identity was causing me to seek, and that was part of some realm of suffering. But when I heard it again on the recording, it sounded like what she was saying, that it's actually authenticity that's seeking authenticity, and that engaging in that process is not actually an ego-identified process, that it's something that you know, builds builds center, that contributes to the growth of center. So it was just so nice to consider that, oh, wait, there's like this other, that is maybe what was intended by the phrase of the title.
Yeah, it's so interesting how ego would want to co-opt something and make it make the process of seeking something that would serve it instead of life.
Right.
Because I think if I might reflect what you said, what you understand it is awareness seeking itself. Because there is some level of awareness of what we are authentically, and we know that when we are identified with ego, that there's something going on that doesn't feel okay, which causes us to seek that feeling of okayness that comes with attention on awareness. So we know that that's what we are. We have had that experience, which is why the identification with ego feels so false and hollow. And then we don't get to the point where whatever it is that ego layer is, or egocentric karmic conditioning wants us to pursue, doesn't give us anything but dissatisfaction. And we start to question whether or not, we start to question that process of ego, because we have an awareness that of what we are that's seeking to express itself behind all of those layers.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, what just dropped in was there, you know, I have experienced two forms of seeking. And one is, you know, all right, it's the 4th of July. I want to have a good time. I want to go, you know, to this place and have fun. And, you know, so I start seeking some sort of external, idea. And I think that that's what I had interpreted this more of, and that's one type of process. And then there's the process that you were describing, which is, you know, that there is this, the spirit of inquiry that happens when you suddenly understand that there is something not quite right about that type of seeking, you know, about that outside seeking. And so you start to seek, I guess, in a different, I engaged in a different process of seeking, you know, where, the direction sort of went inward rather than outward. And so it's that sense of, wait, well, this seeking isn't working out, like, but this other one seems to be leading me towards something that is more what I want, or more what life wants for me.
So let me just make sure I catch up. So you're identifying two distinct processes. One process of seeking, which, if I might use my own words there, actually results in dissatisfaction, because no matter how much you seek the experience, you are left with some feeling that it's not getting you what you're seeking. And the other experience, which actually is closer to what is seeking,
And the interesting thing about that is, at least to me, what arose when you said that, that one process furthers the ego identity, and then the other process is the letting go of the identity in order for what, that which is authentic to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. One builds the ego, the other breaks the ego down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I have the same thing I have no idea how we catch on to this. I really don't. I mean, it just seems, ego's reflected so much back at me in the world that the idea that I would somehow get the inkling that there's something else that that life wants something else for me just feels miraculous. And it just felt like, trying to see something that's standing behind you, like every time you turn around, like it's not there. It's not, and you just get the sense that there's something behind you, but and every time you turn around, most people can't see it. And I just feel very fortunate that, I've had the experience of these two types of seeking, and that, I've had the experience of seeking, authenticity as authenticity, I think, understands it, or as life wants me to. And it's, it's just a much richer, whatever. There are actually no words for it.
Wow, as Penny said, with several exclamation marks, that we actually have the good fortune to be born in a lifetime that we can actually have that experience of our own intelligence.
Yeah.
Or of the intelligence that animates.
Yeah.
And then the miraculous part about it, Jill, as you just pointed out, is that it's just so it's an incredible experience, because the ego process is operating close to the intelligence process.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. And then the intelligence, that's how we know, and that's the miracle.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've had many experiences where, something has dropped in and ego has co-opted it immediately and turned it into something that I'm looking for externally to reflect it back to me, that I know it, and that it, it means something about me, or it means that I'm this type of, student or whatever. And it's a very crafty process. The ego identification, and it's always looking to do that. And so, again, to get any distance from it or any relief from it is, I'm in awe. I'm in total awe.
and in awe of the person who's willing to do that level of practice, right? And we just will do deep gassho to that willingness also.
Yeah, I don't know who that person is. It's just like,
well, that which you're speaking is causing you to speak, Jill.
That's right.
So maybe that's not right. A person, just that authenticity that runs deeply through the form that's trying to express itself.
Yeah, it took root and grew somehow. Yeah, enough so that it got me that experience of life, which is beyond birth.
Well, and I would project that even if ego had co-opted the understanding of the title, the intelligence was still seeking and was transformed in the process, which allowed for the insight that ego had co-opted a process that it had been participating in for however long you've been practicing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is always amazing to have a definition of something that I think I understand allow it to change and shift, and so that just accept that, I have no concrete knowledge of anything.
it's the best place to live.
It's all in flux. But, all right, well, I would love to chat further, but I'm just looking at the clock, and I think I should let someone else on. But it was such a pleasure talking to you, Ashwini. And,
likewise, still.
Yeah, I hope
we'll
talk again.
We'll just keep that speaking going.
Yes, indeed. Okay.
Okay.
Good night.
Take care.
Good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jill. You're listening to Open Air. Ashwini, we're going to break for an important message, and then we'll be right back.
Thanks, Michael.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Ashwini. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Hi, Ashwini and Michael.
Hi.
Hi. One thing that I wanted to have been looking at lately is energy in my body, and an experience that I noticed and really noticed the last time I was on retreat, and I'm trying to work with it, and I was just looking for some guidance with it. So what I notice is that there are days where I wake up and I feel expansive and open. And then there are these days that I wake up and it's the opposite. I don't think that that's anything unique. I think other people have that experience. But,
so the place is, there are days when you wake up and you're feeling open and days when you wake up and you're not.
Right. Right. But what I noticed is that the reason that it's highlighted for me, it's been that way as long as I can remember in my adult life anyway. And what it does is like, so this is why it came up recently. So recently I've been interested in, I never pronounce it correctly, but Ayurveda. And so I was looking at how you determine, like, your doshas. And what I noticed was, like, I'm the extremes. I'm either the one that's kind of going fast and speedy and kind of all over the place, or I'm the other one that's really slow. And
either a kapha or a vata. Right?
Exactly. Right. Right. And it even happens with, like, you know, it came up again with the Enneagram class that's coming up. You know, whenever I take a test, it's always borderline between 4 or 5 different types. You know, I never seem to be, you know, it never rings true, or even on the tests that I take, and I think I've taken every Enneagram test. Mm-hmm. I always am kind of all these other types, too. And so I guess what I'm trying to look at is, what's interesting is that it will feel like a completely different person almost, like the choices I make, the way I go through the day. And I don't think that I have a disorder, you know? I don't know for sure, but I've been watching, and I don't think it's that I'm identified with a certain sub-personality, but it does seem like something about it is that I just feel I will be different. It will be different. The experience will be different. And maybe there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't know. It's just been something that I've been looking at and trying to pull apart what that is.
Well, you know, Lisa, what dropped in when you were saying it is, if I looked at it from a sort of step back and look a little bit more of the process that's going on, see if this rings true, right? There's an attempt to put a box around something in order to be able to understand it and for it to be a some way of controlling the experience. So if I know I'm two, then that explains everything. And explanations assist me in getting something, I'm assuming. Right, so the confusion is that there's no way to typecast you, and so It's a range of emotions. It's a range of energies. It's a range of responses. And there's some process that's attempting to try to box that in order to understand it.
Yeah.
And so just to ask you to consider this, maybe you want a range of things and a range of types and a range of emotions, and maybe there is no requirement to understand it and just be present to whatever's arising and respond to it with whatever response life is presenting at that moment without having to respond as a specific type or a specific dosha or a specific anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I've considered that. You know, what if I'm just, you know, I am changing all the time. Everything is changing. I guess, I don't know. I guess there is something inside of me that says, well, you should be one thing. You know, when people are, you know, talking about their type, or, you know, I'm a 3 or I'm a 5, or, you know, and I know that that's not the point. The point isn't to be a type. The point is to use your type to kind of see how you cause yourself to suffer, see the kind of preferred strategy. And I guess for me, I guess seeing that, I don't know, maybe it's just not that important to say that I'm a type.
Well, if it causes you to suffer that you don't know that you're a type, then that's an interesting process to look at, right? And see what is it that wants you to narrow it down so that it's predictable. I mean, we can see what that is. I mean, ego always wants to limit as a process, because in limitations it has superb control over the life experience. And so, so all labels in my experience, at least I project, always limit us, right? So if I'm always a 2, then I interpret my entire life experience through that lens. And what we're trying to do in practice is not to be limited by any ego label. And so we could look at it as, oh, my God, I don't know what type it is, and I really, really need to figure it out and and then define it and then know about it and then pick it apart. Or we can go, wow, I actually am not limited to any labels, and I can be whatever it is, and life is full spectrum. It has all emotions, and it has all thoughts, and it has all sensations and all of the energies. And if you have access to it without ego controlling how you need it to respond to anything in any specific way, that's liberating. Of course,
yeah, I guess that is liberating.
So you've got in your toolkit everything that life offers to respond to any situation without being typed out.
Well, then I guess, well, this is really helpful. It's really helpful to hear you kind of saying all that, and what it occurs to me is then, so let's say I take the email class, which I am going to do, right? And let's say, since I feel like I am many of the types, I could just pick a type. It doesn't matter, right? Because sometimes I am that type. I mean, I could take the class as that type.
You could, and you could then, you know, if you're using it as an awareness practice tool, which is what the Enya type is, you can use it completely as a process tool instead of a content tool, right? And what I mean by that is, oh, well, if I am a 2, I should respond this way, but I have noticing that this is this response. It really doesn't matter what type it is, but you have a reference system to look at your process, which is what we do in practice.
Right.
You create a structure so that you can see your process, and then you've got complete freedom to notice your process because you have something to reference it against, well, hopefully not egocentric karmic conditioning self-based.
Wow. This is so helpful. Isn't that funny? I really had gotten into this place of not seeing another option. But you know what I mean? That it would just like, okay, well, then you're a type or you're not a type, but not, well, I could just learn about the process of the type. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. And I think that's what you're pointing at, I think, is truly an egocentric karmic conditioning process. It really wants to limit. It wants to divide the world into this versus this. So if you are a 2, then you're not anything else. And what we're attempting to do with the Enneagram is to be able to be whatever we are with whatever it is that life wants to express us as. And so, you know, it's not about dividing ourselves into this type versus this type and being dualistic, which is what ego wants to do.
Right, right. So even being like a vata, what is it, vata kapha, like I could just follow some of the things that are for that type and see how it feels, and then
that's
try
right.
something different.
Exactly. So and in Ayurveda, I happen to know a little bit about, doesn't say that you're one. You might have a predominant type like the Anya type, but you're actually a composite of all the types with one predominating at any one time.
Right.
And if you're out of balance on one, that means that, you know, something's dominating, that you feel off balance, and then you have to get back into the ratio that is your composite. And you can't do that. It's not prescribed, right? So you have to feel your way through the process. And it's like awareness practice, just experiencing everything that's happening and noticing everything that's happening and how we're feeling and where we're getting the information, and then just navigating to responding what is happening instead of what it's telling us is happening. And we practice getting good at doing that, skillful at doing that.
Yes. Yes. This is so helpful. Yes, yes, yes. Isn't that funny? I couldn't see any of this before I got on call. That's so helpful, really, to see all of that. Yeah, so
well,
I can play
with it. That's why we do. That's why we process.
Right, right. Well, this is cool. I have something to play with now and something to learn about, so I'm excited. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And I think that's the attitude of mine, right, Lisa? It, instead of getting focused on figuring it out, because there's a right type to be or a right way to be or a right process to be focused on, we just play with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that just changes the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Great. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Take care. Good
okay,
night.
Thank you. Have a good night. Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air. Ashwini, what I was getting out of your conversation with Lisa was the freedom and the relaxation that comes from getting outside the box.
That's right. Just being with whatever is.
Yes.
Not have to be anything.
Yes. And seeing how conditioning will take on anything, including these practice tools, you know, the Anya type or the Ayurveda types, to just try to reestablish that box and that limitation.
Yep. Yes, exactly. The lens through which, the point of view through which we are forced to be limited.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And separate it, right, Michael? I mean, that's the other thing it does. You create a box and you're inside the box and you're separate from everything else.
Yes. Yes. And when I'm looking through conditioning's lenses, it's just real and true and how it is.
That's right. And nothing else is available.
Exactly. Exactly. Until you get on the phone here and on the radio.
Well, and do practice with Sangha.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's a big blessing. We're going to break now to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Ashwini, I want to give out our phone number here. We might have time for another caller or two. So the phone number is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. And the show ID is 15406. And then folks would enter £1 or their PIN and then pound. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Ashwini. This is Jan, California.
Hi.
Well, I was calling in because the good news update, that the process that Penny was describing about feeling bad and the difference, I was lucky enough to be at that retreat where it was discussed, and I was thinking, oh, you know, nothing's come up in my life that I would feel bad about, you know, nothing to challenge, to see if I've really taken that in. And as Penny described it, I realized that it had, and that that I had come up against a thing that almost always is a surefire feel-bad situation, and I hadn't gone there. And it was like it had been hidden from me until I heard Penny talk. It was just one of those things I had to laugh and call in and share it's just another way that conditioning, I don't know, it hit it. Somehow it hit it.
Mm-hmm. So let me make sure I'm clear. Did you say that you didn't think that you had come up against that situation where you would feel bad, but actually you had and you didn't feel bad, and conditioning had hidden that from you somehow?
Yes, exactly.
And
it was mainly that when she described it, I was thinking, gosh, that hasn't happened. You know, I wish I'd had an experience that would sort of challenge that. Let me see where I am with it. And then I thought, well, the situation that usually causes that is this, and I realized that just happened the other day, and I didn't go there.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was, I don't know, I guess it, to me, it was two things. One is I saw the power of practice because I've been practicing with it and just
mm-hmm.
thought, oh, nothing's come up. And the other is seeing how conditioned thinking just, I don't know what to call it. It's as if it somehow hit it or didn't allow for the acknowledging of it. And I don't know, I haven't seen how that happened yet, but it did.
Uh-huh. Well, I think what you're pointing at is that, you know, we talk about it as a reference system. And if you, even though you're not feeling bad, the system that you're referencing to determine whether you're feeling bad or not is still conditioning.
I guess so.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we look at the traditional pathways to know whether we're feeling bad or not. And because it's such a familiar pathway, we don't realize that it's still controlling our experience. Because we don't get to have the enjoyment of not feeling bad, even when we are not feeling bad. Isn't that surprising?
Yes. And as you were describing that, I just saw that when the situation came up, that I typically would go to the feel bad situation or process, I was very conscious of not going there, and yet there was the immediate... It was like there was an immediate forgetting.
Mm-hmm. Redirection.
Yeah. So, yes, it's just another thing to look at in as far as process goes, and another reason to record immediately about these things.
Yes. I'm actually not feeling bad, and conditioning still has the story. It's almost as if the propaganda machine or the story still remains the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was just very fun to hear the good news update, see where my, you know, where I went to with that, sort of tested it and go, oh, my gosh. And
mm-hmm.
it was comical. It was sort of a little bit of what she mentioned. It was comical to see, oh, my gosh, of course I have.
Mm-hmm.
And the freedom of it. And,
mm-hmm.
and the other thing, I think she pointed to this, but to me the miracle in it is that all energy is available to look at what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
What allowed for this situation to arise, and to focus on what I want, and does this behavior bring that about or not?
Mm-hmm. Well, in other words, the process that we're describing in not having our attention go to feeling bad or the reference system is that the attention is on awareness, and so we can be with whatever is arising, because in looking at it, we've already dropped into awareness.
Yes, right, right, right. We have to be there to even be seeing it. And anyway, just huge gratitude for sort of, well, for having been given a roadmap to...
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, and a mirror, right? To having been given a roadmap so that we don't feel bad, and then having this kind of a process to really see how other parts of conditioning can co-opt something that we've been practicing with and reflect it in a way that shows we're not practicing.
Yeah, and it isn't that it came in negatively. It isn't like it came in and, well, except, as I looked at it tonight, it was like, no, that really hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it was sort of like the memory had been erased. It was another process, exactly what you said, of how conditioning comes in co-ops. And
yeah,
it was just very helpful to see during the radio show how it
happened. Mm-hmm. Well, and it would say it's not negative, right? I mean, it defines what negative is as an emotion that feels negative, but the absence of something is as much an interpretation of that word as a negative feeling.
Yeah, great point, great point. Yeah, and that's, wow, that gives me something else to look at, that because that is an assumption, I think, for me,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
There's significant emotion that goes with feeling bad, and other ways it can show up.
Other ways it can show up, and other ways it can keep us from being present.
Yes.
Because it's defined a certain way that you, I mean, since you've caught on to one way it's doing it, you may not catch on to the other way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's like a big game, isn't it? I mean...
it is, truly.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the attitude of mine I try to keep as much as possible, because then it makes it, okay, what's next?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
What am I going to see, and how did that happen?
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, it's life's game, I guess.
Yeah, big game of hide and seek.
Apparently. Anyway.
With smoke and mirrors.
It's what?
With smoke and mirrors.
Yes, yes. And I guess, the experience tonight certainly reflected that, and I just it makes me, I guess where it takes me, it just makes me want to pay that much more attention, feeling like I am paying attention, but it feels like there's more there that I can be, if I don't know how to say this, except to be even more aware, more present,
and paying what, and sort of tuning our awareness of what we're paying attention to.
There you go. It's the fine-tuning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I just I wanted to participate. I wanted to share that. And just feeling huge gratitude for all the teachings.
Yep. We're lucky indeed.
We certainly are. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Michael. Good night.
And Michael?
Can you hear me now, Ashwini?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. My console is responding a little slowly, so I apologize that there's a little delay there. And I would love to talk a little more about not feeling bad.
Okay.
That just seems like the most radical freeing. We were talking with Lisa before about, getting outside the box. And not feeling bad feels like a really, like a path to just, live your life. And as you were talking about, gives us a chance to see what actually happened instead of going into that same conditioned loop of feeling bad, which is just going to make me unconscious, even more unable to see what happened.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. It just reinforces, I think we were discussing that in relation to a quote from Aldous Huxley, and I think it's in his latest newsletter, to in the newsletter, Guide protection, which is, you know, feeling bad just reinforces the self that feels bad.
Yeah.
Like self-reproach, implied, however painful, implies that the self exists.
Say that again, that the self is?
Self-reproach, however painful, just keeps intact, that keeps intact the self.
Yes. Yes.
So when we feel bad, then there's someone who feels bad, which is what the ego process is all about. Feeling it's not about feeling bad as much as it reinforces the process of a person who feels bad or an ego that feels bad. Ego is maintaining itself, basically.
Yes, yes. Ego is making itself real through that process.
That's right.
Yeah, and if we're not willing to go there, we're just that much more clear in our ability to see who and how we are.
That's right. And if the attention is not in the feeling bad process, then it's available for to be here and to be present to something. Well, more than anything else, we're redirecting our attention pathways to just being in life instead of being in the system.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing.
It is indeed.
Yeah, and I love how Penny brought that up as a focus and something that I can certainly take with me and practice this week. And because, you know, no doubt it's going to come up. And as Jan mentioned, conditioning is going to scramble the fact that we did see how the process worked.
Yes, well, I think it's trying every which way to always try to you know, use whatever we've seen in order to further itself.
Yes, yes.
Co-opting practice for its purpose, I think, is how we talk about it.
Say that last bit again.
I said co-opting practice.
Yes, yes, co-opting practice.
Yes, whatever we listen to.
Exactly. Ashwini, it's been a great pleasure to have you on the show with us tonight.
Thank you, Michael.
Let's do it again.
I'm sure we will. And
okay.
I'll be back next week.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Good night.